Yeah, it's the BSD Bandit on Decipher podcast. It's a wonderful Wednesday. Join us all. I love y'all. Later. Yep, yep.
Yes. Welcome, everyone, to the Decipher podcast. If you have a Twitter account or even just an internet-connected computer, you know who that is. That's Charles Shirer. Charles, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great in my Tony the Tiger voice.
I love it. I love the laugh. I love the enthusiasm. I love it all. So this is one of those rare podcasts. Usually the podcasts I do with people I know pretty well, friends, folks I've known in the security world for a long time. Mm-hmm. We don't know each other at all.
Right.
I reached out to you a couple weeks ago and I was like, dude, these hype videos that you do are the greatest thing in the world. They're my favorite thing. I don't remember how I came across it, I don't know, a few months ago. I'm not sure exactly how long you've been doing them, but somebody in my timeline retweeted one and was like, this makes my day every day. And so I, you know, followed you and started watching them. Let's start there. How long have you been doing these and where did you kind of come up with the idea for it?
Oh, I've been doing them for over a year now. Over a year now. Okay. So literally like right before the pandemic hit, I just noticed that there were a lot of folks on Twitter. You know, they were like either like sad. It was a lot of depression. People were just sad and people were just literally just not happy. They were hating life. A lot of folks. Right. And I noticed, I'm like, you know what? This got to change. Like, and I adopt the hacker lifestyle. I don't just accept things the way they are. So I said, you know what? We got to change this. So what I did, I just started out with just, you know, just like motivational tweets. I wasn't even doing videos at that time. And and something just hit me. I was like, you know what? This is the age of video. What am I doing? I said, let me turn on this camera phone and start talking. So what I did, yes, literally the camera phone. So what I wound up doing, I was just, you know, I just want to keep people motivated because especially when the pandemic hit, I wanted to keep people motivated and just like, look, I know we're all going through this together, but we can live to fight another day. Don't quit on yourself. Get out there and continue going after the greatness. If somebody needs help or if you need somebody that's like rooting for you, I'm rooting for you. Like, I just wanted to keep people going and just keep them like living life, like live. Mm-hmm. And now where the concept of the t-shirts came in, that was more so from a standpoint. That's pretty much part of my personality. I'm a retro guy. I love it. And I figured like, hey, let me just do like t-shirts, a different t-shirt each day related to a fun time in life where folks were like, if you were playing Super Mario Brothers, it'd take you back to a time where it was just fun and it wasn't so complex. So that's how I put the retro games to life. Let's not keep life so complex to where we're forgetting to have fun. So that's where the concept of the t-shirts come out. So each day I try to wear a different one each day.
You must have like 9 closets just full of like t-shirts.
My goodness. My closet is literally around the corner. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of t-shirts, but I figured, you know what? Let's make it, I started out with calling it just a summer retro, but I was like, let's keep it going. Let's keep retro year round. So I wanted to be retro year round. So that's why I just kept up with the t-shirts. Yeah, we were inside anyway. I wasn't going to wear anything warm. So I said, you know what? Let's keep up with the t-shirts. Today was Final Fantasy on Wonderful Wednesday.
I love it. I like the fact that this started kind of before the pandemic because there's a lot of these. I've seen, you know, and rightfully so, a lot of these type of like motivational projects, people were like, listen, everything sucks. You know, last year, especially people were like, everything sucks. We're all stuck inside.
Yeah.
We all need some shit to keep ourselves like motivated and positive. But, you know, you were kind of going at it even before everything started to suck real hard.
Oh yeah.
was that just kind of part of your positive, like, is your personality just kind of positive? Like, you know, always stay motivated all the time anyway.
This is my personality. This is moi. shout out to the blind hacker. Me and the blind hacker used to work together. He could confirm it.
Right on.
Yeah, this is it. I look at it this way. I'm appreciative to be able to do what I do for a living. I'm actually a red teamer, a pen tester. I get to do that for a living every day. I mean, it's something that I enjoy doing. I get to do that every day, get paid to do what I love every day. It don't get no sweeter than that.
It's true.
So, yeah, this the package. So if you see me at a conference, this is it.
That's awesome. Well, hopefully there will be conferences again and we can actually meet up in person.
Oh, yeah.
Which would be great. I think it's coming. I was just talking to somebody earlier this afternoon about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'll be this fall, but, you know, I think by next spring, this time next year, we'll all be hopefully hanging out somewhere together.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm literally, I literally plan on going to Wild West Hack Fest in September, mm-hmm. the one in Deadwood.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do plan on being in person there.
Oh, man. That sounds cool. First of all, Deadwood is one of my favorite TV shows of all time.
Look at that.
And I would love to go out there. I don't know if that will happen, but I wanted to ask you a little mm-hmm. bit about how you got into security. What was your kind of introduction to it? Were you a hacker as a kid? Did you grow up in that kind of like mindset, or was it something you fell into later in life?
Well, I started out just, like I said, I was just a computer guy. Like, I just enjoyed, like, computers. So, and I would say, like, more so, like, I'd say, like, 99, like, around, like, 1999, I got into it, like, with, started out, I kind of did it backwards. So, what I mean by backwards is this, I took a liking to Linux / Unix early, and then worked my way back to Windows. So I've always been like a command line person. I've been a VI, still a VI guy to this day. And that's where the name BSD Bandit comes from, because I'm a huge fan of FreeBSD.
Okay.
Free and open. So I started out just like learning Unix, learning Linux, and then learning how like Windows works. I also worked with some Novell. Shout out to all my NetWare folks. I got to work with some Novell early in my career, like 23. Yeah, I got to work with Novell group-wise. Yes.
Yes. Oh, man.
411.
I cut my teeth on that. For several years. Oh.
Yeah. That Dell PowerEdge 4400. I love y'all. But I got to work with a lot of that technology early. And I've always just been curious and learning, more so focusing on the command line, because I figured if you could do you could do anything on the command line, even if the GUI stops working, the command line doesn't. So that's kind of like intrigued, like, hey, how can I do this? And, you know, and then just learn how to build computers, learn PC hardware, just being creative and having fun at the same time. I mean, it was a time where you can, you know, with computers, you can go to like a lot of different local computer shops and just hang out, talk about different parts and everything else. And then you got to know folks, and it was just fun. Like, and I still think it's fun to this day. It's just become a little bit more, I guess, like everybody's into it now. So it's not the mystique that it once was, but I mean, it's just fun. That's how I got into it. I started out with Unix and Linux and learned Windows, learned hardware, of course, still video gaming. That doesn't stop. And I never thought about like, oh, this is going to be InfoSec, this is going to be cybersecurity. I was just a computer guy. And I still kind of approach it with that mindset. Like, I just like computers. It's just that now that I just like bypassing security of computers. That's it. So I never really called it just InfoSec or cyber, all the other extra alphabet words that come with it.
Right. Yeah. Well, a lot of the folks of like my generation, I think you're a little younger than I am, maybe.
I'm 41.
Like I'm 48. So yeah, I got a few years on you, but kind of that generation of, mm-hmm. of security and hackers that grew up in like the 80s into the early 90s.
Yeah.
I think kind of started the way you did, like kind of the Unix systems, the command line, figuring out how things worked,
mm-hmm.
and then trying to get systems to do things they weren't supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, which is essentially what your job is now as a red teamer.
Yes.
Right? And that sounds like the funnest job in the world to me. Just like it's being fun. Able to, like, somebody's paying you, like, you know, here's our network, get in.
And you're That's like, it.
Cool.
That's it.
I know what I'm doing today.
Especially web applications. I love webs.
How different? How long have you been doing the red team thing?
The red team thing, more so, it's been like probably like 3 years now. Okay. But more so from that, mainly was just like web applications. Web applications have been 7 years. Wow, it's been 7 years for web hacking web apps. And it's okay. Funny because with web apps and a combination of wireless, but with web apps, the cool part about that is like there was a time that nobody paid attention to web apps. It was mostly all about the perimeter. It was all about who had the best firewall and the ACLs and deep packet inspection. So nobody was really focusing on port 80 and 443, which allowed a little cool stuff to get it seep into your network. Yes. and browser hooking and everything else. So and then people started to pay attention. So now the attacks have become more sophisticated.
Yeah. So has that made your job more difficult?
Yeah, as it should. Because our job as red teamers and penetration testers, that's great. You can hack in and everything else. But if you're not helping to make security teams better, then what are you really doing? That's the end goal. They pay you to be able to bypass the security controls and see what you can get into in order to help strengthen the security of the organization. And if you're not working to do that, it's not all about, oh, okay, I got root and I got admin and that's it. No, it's all about what data can you extract from that business and the impact if you're able to extract that data. And if you can, how can you help them? How can you show them where it's at so they can fix it in order to, so they're not pretty much not on the news, not a SolarWinds. Sorry, Solar.
You don't want that.
No.
Nobody wants
no.
that. So that part about helping the business secure itself, how often does it happen where, you know, after an engagement, you're giving the final report or the readout, and you're explaining to people, you know, maybe where the weak spots are or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, business leaders are like, great, that's great. Thanks for your help. And then nothing happens. Like, do you ever, like, how often do people just not pay attention to the recommendations that you give them?
You know what? It's hard to tell because, you know, even though they say thanks for your help or whatever else, then they don't really call you again until a time for another pen test. And a lot of times, a lot of things have fixed from the pen test before. So I think they do pay attention. It's just that they're probably like, oh, okay, well, you know, thank you for your services. Okay, cool. And then they go in-house and then they just start, I guess, like doing some spring cleaning and rearranging or whatnot. And then when they get back around probably like the following year or several months or whatnot, then they just say, hey, want to test us again? Sure.
Yes, I do.
Let's make this transaction happen and boom, voila. as a red teamer or as a pen tester, your job, not only look at, you know, kind of look at what was there before, but also try to find new things, you know, because as you all know, when you patch something, it changes your security. Anything that you patch, you update, or you introduce it to the network changes the scope of your security.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, all changes have after effects, even if it's a positive change and you're fixing the Exchange server bugs or whatever it happens to be.
Exchange.
That's going to yeah. The look on your face right there is like, oh, yeah.
I've been an email administrator, so when I hear Exchange or GroupWise, I'm like,
literally. Just kind of get sweaty and you're like, oh, no. You know, it's on the other side of those.
Sure do.
A lot of the folks that I know that are like kind of in, you know, in their 40s now that started out in security, you know, say 20 plus years ago.
Yeah.
Came up in that pen testing world, like in the early 2000s, you know, when a lot of companies were starting to put everything online.
Yeah.
They didn't really understand what that meant. And so, you know, they'd bring in a consultant and they would just own them six ways from Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then not much would happen after that. Like some of the horror stories I've heard from those, you know, pen testing consultants back in the day, they're just like the same place. Like every year we just, you know, a bank, we just go and get into their, you know, payment systems with no trouble whatsoever. And these are, you know, multi-billion dollar corporations.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's changed at this point. But
I think it has changed. I think it has changed. Like, you still have, you know, some companies out there that, again, there's still companies out there that think that maybe a vulnerability scan is a pen test, which is not, you know, sure. and that's okay, because again, we, you know, there's new businesses popping up all the time. And again, that's our, I believe, and this is me personally, I believe that's our job to let folks know, like, hey, here's what a vulnerability scan gets you. Here's what a penetration test gets you. Here's what a red team gets you. You know, it gives the company options. And the more we explain what each one is, I think that helps the business a little bit more and helps them make a better decision on what they should start out with. Maybe you should just start out with a quick vulnerability scan just to give a lay of the land of what's going on, you know, with your network. You know, do you need a lot of patches? Do you need, you know, like, just pretty much just an overview. And then if they may want to come back and be like, you know what, we've locked this down pretty well. Let's jump into a pen test at least. Let's do a pen test, you know, because the red team is more so like an exercise, you know, an adversarial exercise. So you kind of want to look at, okay, let me just do a pen test to see what you can do now that my systems have been patched and everything else, if there's anything that the scanner might have missed. So yeah, it's kind of on that standpoint. It's not like it was like early 2000s, because again, we were all looking at this through pretty much through a similar pair of eyes. Like, this is the new thing. Okay, wow, we got these web apps, we got smart browsers, like, we got different types of browsers, new programming languages were popping up that were that are still popular to this day. It's not all about C and assembly, and even old ways of like JavaScript, you know, that's evolved. So, you know, and Python, it's been around for a long time, but it really didn't gain that popularity until like the early 2000s, if you think about it, because it was all about Perl for a long time, you know, and there was a lot of sites that were written in Perl.
Yep.
So, you know, it just evolved over time. And I just think that us as an entire community, we kind of went as we go, like, learn as you go, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Even for the security folks.
Oh yeah. I mean, the way that you described, you know, going from Unix, Linux, kind of Windows, and just progressing like that, I think is a, you know, kind of a perfect description of the, if you're in this industry, you always have to be learning, because things are changing all the time.
Oh yeah.
You don't have time to just sit back and chill, even for 6 months. Mm-mm. You know, somebody is doing something different that you're going to have to catch up on, especially in your type of role.
Yes.
So how different, or how much more difficult are things now as a, you know, say a red teamer with so much stuff shifting to the cloud? Like, is that more of a hurdle for someone like you, or does it make things maybe a little easier?
I wouldn't call it a hurdle. More, it kind of like you're, I put it like this: everything old is new again. So again, with networking, right? Network is not going to change. The TCP/IP protocol doesn't change, whether it's cloud or on-prem. You still have to use the same protocols. You're still going to use HTTP. Whether you're pen testing on-prem, whether you're pen testing IoT, and I call IoT the stuffed bell pepper, by the way. And the reason I call it the stuffed bell pepper is this. With many smart devices, the IoT devices, they have several different things going on. You can be able to like hack sensors, Bluetooth, wireless, and web, and network. It has all those different functionalities all in one. Depends on what, you know, what IoT devices you have. Now, as far as the cloud in general, it's just saying that, okay, my infrastructure is on someone else's, but you're still running a network. You still have a firewall. You still have ACLs in place. I mean, it doesn't really change. It's pretty much, I just look at it like the only thing different is the name. Okay, I'm pen testing the cloud this week. Oh, I'm pen testing IoT this week. Oh, I'm on-prem. Oh, it's just web app. You know, I think it's just all the same. It's just that we just name it something different.
I think you're right about that. One of the things that I have heard people mention, though, is that sometimes they're like, oh, well, you know, we've moved everything to the cloud, so we're good on security. Like, we've, I guess, like, you know, kind of outsource that to Google or Amazon or, you know, whoever it happens to be. That to me could be a very dangerous mindset. If you're like, well, Amazon's got that handled for me, right? We're all good. I don't need to worry about it.
Exactly. Okay, let's put it to you this way. Hey, I just moved into a small town. I'm going to leave all my doors unlocked, even the car doors and everything else. I'm good.
Yeah. Right.
Just because you're moving to an area that not many people know about doesn't mean you get to leave everything unlocked.
Nope. That's an excellent metaphor. I think you're exactly right about that. So to go back a little bit, were you mentioned like kind of the way that you started learning, you were hanging out in computer shops, mm-hmm. and you had your local places, you go talk to people and you just kind of learn. Were you kind of self-taught? Like, did you get into it on your own just because it seemed interesting to you? And then, you know, you meet some like-minded people and you just kind of start learning from them?
Well, more so, again, like I said, I'm from the video game generation more so, right?
Okay.
So with the video game generation, I mean, a lot of us gamers are self-taught. So I would call it like self-taught because here's the thing. You play a video game and you learn different tips and tricks on how to bypass different levels. So mm-hmm. I took that same mindset because, again, there was no map for Super Mario Brothers 3. You just went through the different boards and you learned how things worked or you died, right? So taking that same mindset through computers is just more so, hey, here's what I want to learn. And nobody is 100% self-taught. Like, you get help because if you're trying to learn something, like, perfect example, when I learned something new to this day with Unix to this day, right? Something new, whether it's a command line, whatever it is, right? Somebody said, hey, that's cool that you're doing it this way. Let me show you a better way. And that's how you kind of add on. So yeah, I say the self-taught part is more so the initiative. Like, I'm taking an initiative to use Linux and Unix and I'm getting on the internet with it. But then someone said, hey, that's cool that you can get on the internet this way, but let me show you a better and faster and maybe a more awesome way that you can add to your tool set as well, too. So I think that's how I pretty much learn. I'm always willing to listen to what someone else has to say about a specific subject that I'm working on because they've probably already been where I'm at.
That's a good point. Yeah. And it can be a dangerous thing when you think that you're an expert on something. You're like, well, I don't have any more to learn about this. Like, I've been doing it. Eyes got wide on that one. I've been doing this for 20 years. I know everything. Like, no, you don't. Like, no. Mm-mm. You don't. There's always something else to learn.
I get nervous when somebody says expert. I'm like, beep, 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 beep. It's like tilt. Because, again, or if you hear the statement, I know everything there is to know about computers. Really? We need to bring you in and study you. We got to study this. We got to study this because you don't exist. You are a rare breed. We need you.
Yeah.
It's impossible, and I'm saying this live. It is impossible to know everything there is to know about computers because that means you know every programming language, every nook and cranny, every security vulnerability that's out there, every 0 day before it's even invented out there. Every operating system, every command for that operating system, every cloud infrastructure, every IoT device, every. No. Right. Impossible.
Yeah. You're 100% right, Charles. Maybe, I don't know, a week or two ago, I was talking to another security researcher and, you know, who has a very specific, you know, but highly developed, you know, knowledge set.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, you're an expert on this. And he was like, dude, I don't even know how computers work. Nobody knows how computers work. It's fucking magic. Nobody really gets it. They're just like magic boxes that, you know, take commands and then do other things with them. And like, we know how to give them input and we hope that the output is what we want.
But right.
That's kind of it.
Right.
You know,
because I mean, we can't write machine language. We have an interpreter that.
Right.
Interprets the, even with assembly, you can write it in assembly, but you still have to compile assembly in order for it to instruct the computer to do different things that you want it to do. So you can't really know, unless you can really just say, you know what, I don't need assembly, I can just talk directly to the computer. I haven't met that person yet. If they're online, they're listening to this, you know, give me a shout on Twitter. I would love to know how you did it. Teach me. I'm always willing to learn.
I think I've seen it in some movies. It doesn't really work.
No.
It's usually a terrible movie with bad graphics and, you know, yeah, some kind of cybernetic thing
happening. Yeah, and some kid saying it's a Unix system.
Right. What a perfect line right there. A great drop. Excellent. I wanted to ask you, like, you mentioned your video game interest. There seems to be such an overlap in the gaming industry and the security community. And I don't know if that's just like the curiosity factor that's kind of inherent in both pursuits. Like, you know, if you want to be, you know, whatever it is, Super Mario Brothers or one of the, you know, more complex, like, world building games these days, like, you have to be super curious and have a lot of perseverance and a lot of
patience,
you know, initiative. Like,
yeah,
patience. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, is that kind of the overlapping skill set that makes both things interesting to one type of person?
I believe so. If you take it back, right? Legend of Zelda, you definitely needed patience, especially if you didn't have a map, because it had the basic map, but it didn't tell you everything.
Yeah.
But you have to have patience, because you wasn't beating that game all in one day. It just wouldn't allow. That's why they had that save function built into the cartridge, where you had to hold the reset button and hit power at the same time to reset it. Why do I still remember that? That's scary.
Because you probably lost some games. That's why.
Pretty much, yeah. So, but just the mere fact that you know, you had to do that, you had to go out and explore. And then, you know, fast forward to 2020, 2021. Legend of Zelda, I'm going to use it again, The Breath of the Wild, where it's an open world and you have to discover different things, your bow and arrow and everything, right? And no game is perfect. So you're going to find different, like, quirks and stuff that you don't like about the game. But that's all part of exploring. And that's all a part of working with and security, computers in general, right? There's always going to be certain things that if you're learning a programming language that you're not going to like about that programming language, but you continue to explore it because it helps you do different things that you wasn't able to do on your own. So for example, I'm learning the Rust programming language right now, right?
Okay.
I love Rust. Now, is there some things that I don't like about it? Of course. But I'm still willing to wake up each day and actually explore the possibilities of Rust and what it could do for me. Same thing with video games.
Yeah.
And that's how it kind of like they kind of interact. So I think that helps a lot when you do that.
Yeah, that the whole idea of willing to wake up every day and try to learn something new and not just, you know, kind of rely on whatever knowledge you've built up to that point, I think is key to the hacker mindset to me. I mean, everybody I know that labels themselves a hacker has that kind of mindset. It's like, okay, I sort of understand how this one thing works, but let me see if I can make it do something it's not supposed to do, or get around the security controls, you know, as a red teamer might.
Right.
Or let me go learn this other crazy skill that I have no musical ability. Let me go see if I can teach myself how to play guitar or trumpet or something. You know, that kind of persistence and, you know, lifelong learning mindset, it seems like it's key to succeeding in not just security, but, you know, life in general.
Yeah. And it's true. And it's funny. And I don't even know if this guy is even on, whoever wrote this blog is even online anymore. Shout out to Elfquin, right? I read this article 21 years ago. It came out in June of 2000. And it was an open letter to the wannabe hacker. And it just said, you know, hacking is, and I'm just going to summarize it, but hacking is something that comes from inside of you. The curiosity and the will to know is what it should be what drives you. You know, the mere fact that you don't know something, you should take it as a challenge and just try it. Believe me, I've learned this way. We've all learned this way. And I don't think there's a better way. So if someone says someone or something says, hey, does this work or not? Your answer should always be just try it.
I love it. Yeah.
And that stuck with me. I never forgot that.
Yep. I've read several different, I'm not sure if I ever read that one, but I've read, you know, other kind of versions about of yeah. that kind of, you know, not manifesto, but that kind of sentiment where you're like, look, if you know how to do something, that's great. But what about the things you don't know how to do?
Right.
If somebody tells you you can't do that, go do that. You know, that's within the bounds of the law.
Yes.
But, you know, that's something that I've tried to tell my kids, mm-hmm. you know, as they've grown up, like, don't just take everything at face value. If
right.
somebody tells you that's the way we've always done it, don't listen to that person. There's probably a reason that they're where they are. Like, you have to be willing to go beyond and think, well, why yeah. have we always done it that way? You know, like, there's a better way over here. Like you mentioned earlier, Charles,
mm-hmm.
like, there's a better way to do this in Unix. There's a better way to do this.
Yes.
Like, look for those other ways. You know, don't just be happy with the status quo, I guess.
Right. And the best way to do that, look for the forgotten knowledge. And and I was reading an article, James Kettle, Port Swigger. I'm shouting people out today. Shout out to that guy. So he had an awesome article on, so you want to be a web security researcher. And he pointed out something that was very interesting. He said, you know, you want to kind of, you know, when you do bug bounties, it's kind of like you're doing it from a black box perspective, right? And then when you want to do, you know, learn the black box way where you don't have access to the source code and everything else, then learn the white box way where you have access to the source code, right? And then pretty much look for the forgotten knowledge. And I'm summarizing what he said too. So look for the forgotten knowledge as well too. A lot of time, that's great. You got to keep up with the latest and greatest developments. But there's a lot of knowledge, a lot of research that's already been done. For example, DNS rebinding. It was a page by RSnake, which huge fan of RSnake. Oh, you know RSnake? Oh,
yeah, he's look a good at friend of mine.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. Well, tell him BSD Band is a huge fan. I really enjoy a lot of his work. I read his article on DNS rebinding. He did a paper on DNS rebinding. And you know, a lot of folks have forgot about that technique, but it's like you go back and you know, you read that, and that's extra knowledge that you might have even forgotten or you didn't even know existed until somebody told mm-hmm. you. Thanks, James. And then you go back and you read the subject, like, oh my goodness, I didn't even know about this. And then you add that to your arsenal. But don't forget the forgotten knowledge. So yeah. I would say that too. So yeah, if somebody says you can't do something, definitely just try it. Go back and research why they think the way they think and why they think this is, even though it's always been done this way, why did they start doing it that way in the first place? Question it. And then they're like, you know what? Okay, they did it this way. I think I see a better way. And you'd be surprised. You just might invent a new way for a new wave of generations to do something. Like, for example, how to write in cursive, or I'm just using that example, just throwing something out there. But yeah, there's always a new way to do something.
And, you know, that forgotten knowledge part of it, I think is pretty, pretty well said, because there's a lot of that in some of it's generational, you know, people, you know, that, you know, there's a younger generation, you know, people in their mm-hmm. mid-20s that just don't know about stuff that was done 20 years ago. And
right.
You know, and they're like, well, shit, I need a way to do this. Maybe I'll go read some papers. But, you know, there's lots of stuff that kind of slips through the cracks that people do kind of forget about just because it's not needed anymore mm-hmm. or they haven't had a need for it.
But, right.
The willingness to kind of question things and be like, well, why did we do it this way? A lot of that has to do with, like, expediency. Well, this was the easiest way to do it at that point, so that's why we've always done it that way.
Right.
Or, you know, some kind of, you know, cultural, you know, inertia where they're just like, well, this is just what we do.
Yeah, pretty much.
The way it is. You're like, okay, great. Awesome. Let's not do it that way. Let's find a better way.
Yes.
So you're on my podcast right now, but I know you're involved in a couple podcasts too, right?
Oh, yes. So my podcast, Positively Blue Team Podcast, and it's myself and Understudy 77. And what we do with that particular podcast, right? what we do is you got 30 minutes. We touch on a topic for just 30 minutes. That's it. That's pretty much the format. 30 minutes. We don't say, hey, it's a guest. We're co-host. Everybody's co-host because we're all, it's kind of like a round table talk and we're talking on a specific subject. One subject that we talked about was policy. Another one was we had recruiters on another show, you know, and we just talk about like different topics because we want everyone to be involved, not just the tech wizards. We want everyone that's to get involved and actually say, oh, well, maybe, you know, listening to that podcast, that might in spark, like, hey, that might be the career path that I want to choose. So, Positively Blue Team. Nice. Our episodes usually air on Sundays. We usually record on Thursdays. Awesome. Now, I'm also part of Grumpy Hackers. Shout out to Grumpy Hackers podcast.
You're like the least grumpy person I've ever talked to.
You know what's funny? You know what's funny? Sorry for the false advertisement, folks. So, with Grumpy Hackers, it's an extension of Nova Hackers. I'm part of Nova Hackers. We're extension of Nova Hackers, and how that idea came about was like, man, Nova Hackers, we learned so much, and we literally stood out in the parking lot. It was raining too, and we stood out just talk about different topics and everything else, and I mean till real late. And we was like, you know what? We should do a podcast. I said, what are you gonna call it? So I didn't think of the name. I believe Mubix. Shout out to Mubix. Love you, bro. He actually came up with the name, I believe, with Grumpy Hackers, right?
Nice.
And I said, oh, that's perfect. That's great. Let's go with it. I mean, it's false advertisement for me, but let's go with it. But I loved it though. And we do Grumpy Hackers, and I mean, we just have a good time with it, man, and just talk about everything that happened within InfoSec that entire week, whether it's articles, and you can even get on there and just talk about something that you're working on or whatever else. Because again, there could be somebody on the chat or within the podcast group that can help you solve a problem that you've been trying to solve before you got on there. So
nice.
Shout out to Grumpy Hackers.
Definitely some false advertising right
yes
there.
I love it.
I like it. What's the Nova hacking scene like these days? I mean, I think when people think about Nova and DC, they think about like the government industrial complex, but there's obviously a lot more to it than that. So what's the InfoSec scene like there these days?
Well, it's a driving force. I mean, even though, of course, we're 100% virtual and we're waiting to get back to hang out with one another, but we're still active on the internet. I mean, we're still actively doing meetings. We still have our virtual meetings every second Monday of every month. So we're still pretty busy, and you know, nothing's changed. Only thing that's changed is the location, which instead of being in a physical building, we're now just riding the wave of the TCP and HTTP protocols.
Just on the inner tubes.
Yeah, that's it.
Nice. Nice. Awesome. Well, people, go check out Charles's podcast. Please check out his videos on his Twitter account. Shout that out, Charles. I don't have the...
My Twitter account is at BSDBandit on Twitter.
There it is. It's the best way to start your day every day with these videos. It's the greatest. So, Charles, thank you so much, man, for coming on the podcast. This is a delight. This is
really fun. And thank you for having me, man. I'm super excited.
Of course, I'd love to have you back on at some point.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Hopefully, meet up in a physical location sometime soon.
Yes, and get out of this HTTP building.
Hell yes. Enough. Get outside.
Yes. All right,
man. Thanks so much for your time, Charles. I appreciate it, man.
All right. Thank you.